And now the opinion page. A few weeks ago, a conservative group called Keep America Safe, headed by Bill Kristol and Liz Cheney, the daughter of the former vice president, put this ad on a website.
So who did President Obama's Attorney General Eric Holder hire? 9 lawyers who represented or advocated for terrorist detainees. Who are these government officials? Eric Holder will only name 2. Why the secrecy behind the other 7? Whose values do they share? Tell Eric Holder, Americans have a right to know the identity of the Al-Qaeda 7.
After Washington Post columnist Mark Thiessen defended the ad, he appeared as a guest on The Daily Show and concluded that host Jon Stewart didn't let him get a word in edgewise.
Honestly, you feel like you've made no point. I've not let you make any points.
I think you talked right through me, and I was trying to get some points out about the effectiveness of this program. And
I sincerely apologize. Yeah.
And now here's his chance and your opportunity to respond to the controversy over the Al-Qaeda 7 ad. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And Mark Thiessen joins us here in Studio 3A. He's former chief speechwriter for President George W. Bush. Nice to have you with us on Talk of the Nation today.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
And since the ad came out in your column, it seems very few people are defending it.
Oh, no, I don't think that's true. I think former federal prosecutor Andy McCarthy has come out for it. Other people have come out for it. There's a lot of people who are supportive of the ad. I disagree
with that. But many prominent conservatives, including the former attorney general, say, wait a minute, we think this is wrongheaded.
Sure, some have. I think what the problem comes in is there's a distinction between the great American principle that everybody gets a lawyer and a defendant. And I think there's a misunderstanding of what that exactly means. The Sixth Amendment says that if you are accused of a crime, you have a right to counsel. Most of these people that we're talking about here who are being represented were not accused of crimes and were not in our justice system. These are people who were captured on the battlefield and are being held under the laws of war as any enemy combatants. And so if they're charged with a crime, if they're either in a military commission or in a criminal court, then they have a right to representation, and the government actually provides that, military lawyers for them to defend themselves against those charges. But what we're talking about is something qualitatively different, these habeas cases where all these lawyers have come out of the woodwork and started trying to free enemy combatants held under the laws of war and send them back out to the battlefield where, when they have been sent back, many of them have gone on and killed Americans. This is not an honorable thing to do.
You sort of skip over the point. The Supreme Court has accepted the idea of that this representation.
Well, there was an unprecedented campaign to get to that point. But you know, I always find it interesting that the people say the Supreme Court said it, so it must be right. When President Obama stood in the well of the House the other day and scolded the Supreme Court in front of Congress and had people cheering around the Supreme Court justices while they were sitting there stone faced, no one suddenly said, "Well, Mr. President, the Supreme Court ruled. You're absolutely wrong."
Well, he obeyed the law, and indeed, with the Supreme Court, hardly a liberal bastion at this particular point in its history, said, wait a minute, we accept that these people deserve representation.
234 years in this country, we have held over 5 million enemy combatants in every war going back to the Revolution, and until the War on Terror, there has not been one single successful habeas case ever in the history of this country. The idea that enemy, you know, it's funny.
Until recently, until
this campaign started, until the habeas campaign was launched. If you think about it, the people criticize the Bush administration for not abiding by the Geneva Conventions. The Geneva Conventions, nowhere in the Geneva Conventions does it say that an enemy combatant has a right to counsel, a right to challenge his detention in federal court, or a right to be freed before the end of hostilities. Those are rules for lawful combatants. What these habeas lawyers have done is effectively given rights to terrorists who do not follow the laws of war, who violate the Geneva Conventions, more rights than legal combatants have,
well,
which is unprecedented.
In part because they're not being held under what most people account as the laws of war, which would be the Geneva Conventions.
I don't understand what your point
They're
is.
Not being held in accord with the Third Geneva Convention.
They're being held under the laws of war. They're enemy combatants. They're illegal enemy combatants, but they don't merit Geneva Convention protection.
Well, this is a matter of constitutional dispute. Would you not accept that?
No, there's no dispute that we can hold enemy combatants under the laws of war. In fact, the courts have affirmed that we can hold enemy combatants under the laws
of
war.
So this time you accept the Supreme Court.
there is if you capture somebody on the battlefield, it is undisputed in a war that you can hold somebody who is a threat to you, to your country and to your soldiers until the end of hostilities. This has never been contested before in the history of our country.
And you've heard the comparison. Indeed, your most recent column is on the charge that some people say, wait a minute, John Adams, the future president of the United States, defended the British soldiers charged in the Boston Massacre. Shouldn't we also provide attorneys in this case?
Well, it is a very clever way to wrap themselves in the American flag, except it's wrong. For one thing, John Adams represented the soldiers in the Boston Massacre before the Declaration of Independence, which means they were not foreign enemy combatants. They were his own countrymen. This is the equivalent of a police abuse case, it would be today. And second of all, they were charged with crimes. Of course they deserved representation. That is far different than going in, reaching into the national security system, pulling people out, and using basically turning in the courts into a battlefield in the war on terror.
Yet, nevertheless, the principle "every man deserves a lawyer" seems to be a great American tradition.
Well, how many German soldiers got a lawyer in World War II? How many Japanese soldiers got a lawyer in World War II? How many soldiers in the Korean War? None.
Well, they were arrested in uniform, and there was a degree of due process.
So terrorists should have rights because they don't wear uniforms and don't follow the Geneva Conventions, more rights than people who do follow the Geneva Conventions?
You have to accept that there have been mistakes made because it's hard to tell who's a terrorist and who isn't. And indeed, some of those people who were released from Guantanamo Bay and other detention facilities were shown there was no evidence against them.
Very few. And in fact, it was the Bush administration, even before the habeas campaign started, that had set up a system to review these people. By the time the 2004 the Rasul suit came, there had been at least 300 people who had been sent back from Guantanamo Bay after having been reviewed. They were, you know, think about this. We've captured, according to Defense Department estimates, more than 80,000 people in the war on terror have been detained by the United States. Of those, just 800, less than 800, went to Guantanamo. It's very hard to get sent to Guantanamo. We were not out there scooping up dirt farmers and goat herders and dragging them halfway across the world to Guantanamo. You had to have pretty serious evidence against you. There were review processes in the field. Once they got to Guantanamo, there was more review process. And in 2004, they established something called the CSRT process. And they actually reviewed every single case. There were about 500 and change there. And almost everyone, except for about 30, were found to be direct threats to the United States. And those who weren't were sent home.
There is also, as you said, many of these people have not been charged with crimes. Some of them have been charged
sure.
with crimes. And they should, of course, get a lawyer.
Of course. And they're provided military lawyers by the United States government at taxpayer expense.
And should they find themselves in civilian court, as they may or may not, depending on what happens.
They should be provided lawyers as well, of course. No one says that anyone should go into a courtroom and have a criminal charge brought against them without having the right to defend themselves. We're talking about something qualitatively different, which is interfering with the ability of the United States to conduct war. We have, for the first time in history, lawyers on the battlefield. I mean, they have what the effect of having these lawyers has been absolutely decimating. I went to Guantanamo Bay last fall, and I sat down with Paul Rester, who's the head of the Joint Intelligence Group there. And he explained to me he can't interrogate these people anymore since the habeas lawyers started showing up. Because what you find is that when you're going to interrogate a terrorist, you have to expose intelligence to them. If they're going to get intelligence on a particular part of Afghanistan where there's going to be a military operation, you start asking him about that. He gets the understanding, okay, there's a military operation going on, they're questioning me about. If he's meeting with a habeas lawyer a few hours later or a few days later, you know, that information can get out back to the field. And there have been numerous accounts, and there's a wonderful op-ed today by Tom Joslin and Deborah Burlingame in the Wall Street Journal, where they lay out that the habeas lawyers have been a sieve of information going back and forth between the camps and back home.
These Justice Department employees?
No, the private lawyers who are going in there. When I went to Guantanamo, there's a ferry that takes you across from the landing area to the main area where the detainees are, and everybody was wearing Wilmer Hale hats. I mean, it was just the place was just lousy with lawyers, and they're meeting with them every day. And the interrogators can't question them because they can't expose intelligence to them. The lawyers use legal mail, which is supposed to be designed for privileged communications between lawyer and client,
mm-hmm.
to send family letters back, to provide them with propaganda from the outside, with news accounts from the outside. There's been a whole series of incidents that have been resulted in people in law firms have actually been sanctioned for providing this information. When you take these enemy combatants and give them an outlet to communicate with the outside world, they can get intelligence out. They're even trained to do it. There's something called the Manchester Manual, which is a terrorist document where they train them to use their lawyer visits to get information back to the brothers outside.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. Our guest is Mark Thiessen, the former chief speechwriter for President George W. Bush, now a columnist at The Washington Post. 800-989-8255, email talk at npr.org. And let's begin. This is Steve. Steve with us here from Washington, D.C.
Yeah, hi. I'm a lawyer. I'm a practicing Catholic, and I was in D.C. when 9/11 happened. And I have tremendous confidence in our military personnel and interrogators, but I disagree with your guest just based upon my personal experience. I know a tremendous number of people who feel so strongly about the events that scarred our country that they believe that the American people deserve retribution far beyond what the military and what our military personnel would ever dole out. But as a Catholic like your guest, I strongly believe that we have a duty to ensure that our government respects the dignity and human rights of even our worst enemies. And I think that the question here isn't about our interrogators or military personnel. It's about whether civilian elected officials might be swayed by public opinion and cross the line. And, you know, if civilian lawyers are the wrong way to do that, we can have a policy discussion about this. But I think it's extremely dangerous to, you know, start calling lawyers radicals, start suggesting people are, you know, that they're in the pockets of the enemy just because they're skeptical of government that's, you know, elected, because that's precisely in a free society what we need to do to ensure that these elected officials don't cross the line.
Mark Thiessen?
I actually don't disagree with your caller, except I just disagree with the way of doing that. I don't think that habeas lawyers filing lawsuits on behalf of terrorists is the way to do it. We have a branch of government called the Congress, who has a right to either approve what the administration is doing or pass legislation disapproving. If they don't like the interrogation techniques, they can disapprove them. If they don't like the fact that the detainees don't have habeas rights, they can pass legislation giving it to them. We have a democratic system of government to do this. And in fact,
The courts are part of that democratic system of government too, and
yeah,
they
the
said
courts are supposed,
they do have habeas.
But the tradition is, and if your listener is a lawyer, he knows this. The tradition is that the courts defer to the executive when it comes to matters of war, and they don't stick their nose into it in the way that they have in this particular case. But I'll give you a perfect example on habeas. The Supreme Court in the Rasool decision actually said that they have a statutory right to habeas. Congress went back in 2006 and part of the Military Commissions Act and explicitly said they don't have took away the statutory right to habeas. And so the court went in and overruled them and said now they have a constitutional right to habeas. I mean, this is an interference by the court in the decisions made by the
activist Roberts Court.
This is a interference of the courts in a decision made by Congress and the president in a time of war. It's unprecedented. I've talked to senior Justice Department officials from previous administrations, not ours, who have said that the Boumediene decision, which gave them those rights, is not only wrong, it is probably the most dangerous decision the Supreme Court has made in its history.
Steve, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our guest is Mark Thiessen, a columnist for The Washington Post, author of Courting Disaster, How the CIA Kept America Safe and How Barack Obama is Inviting the Next Attack. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to Daniel. Daniel with us from Portland.
Yes. I would like to know, given the description that the guest has made, how does he explain that one of the clients in the Al-Qaeda advertisement, the Al-Qaeda 7 advertisement, that is, was Jose Padilla, who is a U.S. citizen taken into custody on U.S. soil?
Held in a Navy brig without charge for a couple of years, and later he was charged and tried and convicted.
I'm not sure what what the caller's point is, because Jose Padilla was not held in Guantanamo, as you say. Jose Padilla was a hardcore jihadi terrorist who was sent here by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to blow up apartment buildings in the United States using natural gas. There was actually a dinner held for him the night he left in Karachi, Pakistan, by KSM, Ammar al-Baluchi, Walid bin Attash, and Ramzi bin al-Shib, the men behind the 9/11 attack, fetting him and his partner off as they came to the United States. And KSM even gave him instructions that he was to not blow up to choose an apartment in the building that he was going to blow up high enough so that the people trapped on the floors above could not jump out and escape. This is a man who was sent here to commit mass murder. Okay? And he was when he's charged with a crime, absolutely has a right to representation to defend himself. But trying to free terrorists like this so they can go back to the battlefield, which is what they're trying to do with the people in Guantanamo Bay, is absolutely it's a terrible thing to do.
One of the things the court did rule was that it was inappropriate to hold him, an American citizen, without trial in a Navy brig, without charge.
I don't think that's what the final decision was. The Supreme Court actually, there was a procedural issue and they declined to rule on it. And later it was upheld that he could be held in the Navy brig.
Well, let's go next to Troy. Troy with us from Iowa City.
Yes, I would like to thank you for running the ad. And I would like to say is most people are caught not having a uniform on are shot because they're spies.
In their own country, in Afghanistan?
Well, no, these are Saudi Arabian people that are caught in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Many of them are. Some of them are. Some of them are not. But anyway.
It is an interesting innovation of the laws of war that if you are actually caught violating the laws of war, you get more rights than if you follow them. I mean, the idea that we should give new rights to terrorists because we can't figure – because we have – it's a harder time to figure out who they are because they're not wearing uniforms. I mean, the Geneva Conventions are not – it's actually an interesting thing that people don't understand. A lot of people don't understand. The Geneva Conventions were not designed to protect prisoners of war. They were designed to protect civilians in a time of war. And the way they do that is providing certain privileges, they're not rights, privileges to people who follow the laws of war, who carry their weapons openly, who wear a uniform, who don't hide among civilians, who don't target civilians. You get certain privileges. If you violate those laws, you don't get those privileges. Mm-hmm. Now, the terrorists violate the Geneva Conventions by the very nature of their activity. And so we're supposed to give them rights that lawful combatants don't have. It's amazing.
Troy, thanks very much for the call. We just have a few seconds left, but were there not Bush administration lawyers who also represented some of these detainees?
Apparently, there were unbeknownst to me, there were two who the Holder administration found, and I guess some people slipped through the vetting process. It's the best I can tell.
So they should be identified too.
I think this is about transparency. Okay, you know, it's interesting. The people who criticized John Yoo and Jay Bybee and David Addington and all these people, they didn't want transparency. They wanted their heads. They wanted these people to be fired. They wanted them to be disbarred. They wanted Jay Bybee to be impeached, and they want them to be jailed. All we're asking for is transparency. Who are these people? What are they doing? What's their role in detainee policy?
Well, thank you very much. Mark Thiessen is a author of Courting Disaster, How the CIA Kept America Safe, and How Barack Obama is Inviting the Next Attack. You can find a link to his most recent column for the Washington Post. No, it's not McCarthyism, on our website at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Mark Thiessen, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me today.
Tomorrow we'll talk about the battle over who writes history after the Texas School Board voted to rewrite its textbooks. Join us for that. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.